Torah Way, Northwest London, Friday the 29th of November, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, Rav Mordechai Weiss, Parsha theme. Anything more?
The longest business trip.
I'd like to take the opportunity to thank the organizers, and in particular Reb Dodi, my friend Reb Dodi, and I must say that I'm in awe that he still continues to organize and arrange the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I should also thank the host for him, and Rafir Schleimer, because of Mamsh. This week's Parsha's Toldos, the Parsha of Yaakov and Esav, one of the most famous Parshas. Now obviously everyone knows that the Parsha is not just a story which happened once upon a time. The story is something which has got to teach us and has got to take us through our own life, and it's our job to analyze what went on with Yaakov and Esav and then try and apply it to our own little Yaakov and Esav, which every single one of us have within us, which obviously means the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov. So I'd like to suggest one limit that you could take out from this week's Pash. I'd like to start with the famous Kasha that all the Achreinim and perhaps the Yishonim talk about it. And that Kasha is that we know that Yaakov and Esav made an agreement. They made a partnership. Yaakov, he is going to get Olam Haba, and Esav, he took to himself Olam Hazeh. Yeah, each one took their own part. Now, Esav, he sticks to his part of the deal because he definitely does not get anything of Olam Haba. The question is that L'chayra, we are not keeping to our part of the deal. We all know, every single, all of us, all Esav Olam Hazeh, we all eat, we all drink, we all have houses, we all have, you know, most of us have cars. And, you know, we go away on holidays, we're constantly being enjoying this world. So the Chayra, we're not sticking to our part of the deal. We had a partnership, you gave this away to Esav. Who gives you right to take something which doesn't belong to you? The Olam Hazeh doesn't belong to us, it belongs to Esav and to his descendants. So that is the big major kasha that I'd like to speak about today. Another very, very big kasha that bothered me for many, many years. Chazal HaKadoshim say that when a child is born, he is born with the Yetzer Hara. And he's born with the Yetzer Hara only. Which means a child, until the age of his bar mitzvah, until the age of 13, he hasn't got any Yetzer Tov. The Yetzer Tov only comes in when the child turns bar mitzvah. Now, this bothered me terribly, because in my eyes, what's the Yetzer Hara? Yetzer Hara is like this evil dog, bad thing which is constantly telling us to do bad and constantly do bad things. And on the other hand, Yetzer Tov, even though he's this nice, friendly, you're telling us to do mitzvahs. Now, the problem is, take a child. Most children I know are the sweetest, most innocent little things. You know, they're such sweet little kids. So why are you going to tell me that they only have a Yetzer Hara, they haven't got any Yetzer Tov in them? It just doesn't make any sense to me. If the Yetzer Hara is the way we understand it, as being something bad or something that's constantly telling us to be evil, then that doesn't work, that doesn't fit with this category. So I think that will be an indication that perhaps the Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov does not mean the way we think of it, but rather mean something else. And that's what I would like to suggest this following now. There's a famous mushul that the Heilige Chodesh Avos brings down, Chodesh Avos, in Shara Vodas Hashem, Heilig Tes. He says there was once a country somewhere in India, somewhere in the islands of India. They had this very most peculiar minhag. They couldn't stand having elections only once in 4 years. They decided that they're going to have elections once every single year. Instead of making elections, they used to pick a random person And usually, or not, or always, used to take a random person who was not from this country, who was not from the city. Usually it was just some random wanderer, someone who wandered into the country, and they used to appoint him to become the king of the island. But that is to go for 1 year. For 1 year, he was totally in charge of the entire country. He was able to do whatever he wanted. As soon as the year was over, they sent him right back out of the town, never to be allowed to enter the country again. That was their interesting myth. So it so happened once that some stranger turned up into the country, and they took this fellow and they appointed him. You are now the new king. You appointed to the coronation, and they made a big, huge to-do. And he was enjoying every minute of it. He was enjoying every moment of being the king. And he built himself a palace, and built more than one palaces, and he had money, and he had every single day, he made dinners, and he made sure to spend and to make sure. And not only that, he had so much money that he had put away for himself, from the country where he himself lived. He made sure to bring all his own money, all into this country, and he went and he built who knows what in this country. And he was enjoying himself. All of a sudden, one day, from one day to the next, they take this fellow and they send him out the doors of the country and they banned him from ever coming in again. Now, not only did he not gain from anything that he accumulated the whole entire year, but all his own money that he had already from before all went down the drain, because he took it all and he invested it all in this country, and now he's banned to enter the country again. So that was the first fellow. Sure enough, the next year another fellow turns up with the country, and they take him and they make the exact same thing and they appoint him, but he was very different to the very first one. He was clever and he understood this is something strange. Why does it happen that a stranger turns up in town and they make him the king? It doesn't make sense. Something doesn't fit in. He decided he had a very good idea. He took a liking to one person and he decided that he's going to make sure, and he gave him many different presents and many different things until finally he gained his trust. And one day he calls him into his little room and he says, "Listen, hey, I know there's something going on here. You have to tell me the secret. What goes on?" His fellow didn't have a choice. He said, "Look, I'll tell you the secret. You should know the way it goes in this country is you become king for 1 year, and then when the year is up, you're out. You're never to come back again." So this fellow knew what was going on, so he said, "Okay." He decided that he's not going to be such a fool like the other one. So instead of building palaces and accumulating wealth in the country that he was living, he decided to invest in his own hometown. So that he sent all the money that he had, he constantly sent there all his treasures, he sent to his hometown, he built himself palaces there, and he prepared himself a whole wealth, a whole kingdom far out of this country. So this time, by the end of the year, he said he has nothing to be afraid of. Now, as this year was going on through the Chayyus of Uvus, on the one hand he was happy, on the other hand he was upset. He was happy because he knew that he was now investing in eternity, he was now investing that after the year is going to be over, he's going to go back to his hometown, he's going to enjoy everything he had managed to accumulate. At the same time, he was also upset that he only has so little time, he only has 1 year, a little slot to be able to invest. But at the same time, he was constantly doing it, but he wasn't still even for 1 second, because since he had the power over everything, he was able to get them to tell them to send more money and more money, until finally the year was up, and they told him, "My dear king, we're afraid to tell you that your time is up." They said, "No problem." He gives the country with a big smile on his face. He goes back to his own town. There he had everything waiting for him. He had palaces galore, he had everything he needed there, and he lived happily ever after. Look to Chayyus of Uvus, this same thing is every single one of us. Every single one of us, we could either be like this first person, or we could be like the second person. So either we could think that this is our destination, this is where we're meant to be, and we could use up the time that we're here to enjoy ourselves and to make the most out of living here and enjoying Olam Hazeh. Or we could use the time with Saichu, and we could know that this is just a way of investing in the future, and we have the Olam Habu, which is the Olam of Eternity, and every single thing we do here, we're accumulating mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, and we're sending it all to our palaces, and then when time will be up, then we'll go, we'll go with a smile on our face. In the state in the Basilis Yeshurim, there's always a thought that this is not the place, this is not our final destination. In the famous Chazal Zukt, as this world is considered like a proizdoi, it's like a hallway, and just to enter the palace, to enter the main ballroom, which is Olam Habu. Someone who's Mishaturach Be'erev Shabbos, Erech HaBeShabbos, someone who prepares before Shabbos comes in, will be able to eat on Shabbos. Now, coming back to this Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, I think there's a very, very major mistake. People think as we said before, the Yetzirah is this dark, evil thing, and he's telling us constantly to do bad things. I think that's not correct. That is not the real translation of Yetzirah. The translation of Yetzirah means someone who goes for immediate gratification. He has no interest in investing. The melchome between the Yetzirah and the Yetzirah is a melchome between investing and immediate gratification. And we see this from the parashah of Yaakov and Esav. Esav comes in, he wants Nazida Dashim, he wants this, you know, this whatever it was. And he said, please give it to me now. So Yaakov says, you have to sell me the Bechoyre. So he thinks to himself, what do I have from the whole Bechoyre? From being the firstborn, what do I have from it? What am I gaining now? Nothing. Here I'm going to get a good tshuva, so I'm going to get a good pot of tshuva. So it's well worth it. So he has no interest in investing in the future. But he knows that, you know, the future is going to bring him many, many brochas. Don't forget that in the schus of the book, the fact that Yaakov had the Bechoyre, he was afterwards able to get the bruchas from Yitzchak. Eventually he was able to build a void in the Beis HaMikdash. Yaakov, Isaac was going to lose all of this. He has no problem. If I'm going to have immediate gratification now, I'm going to have my pot of chulent, it's well worth giving away everything else. I have no interest in investing in the future. This is Isaac and this is Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu says, he makes cheshbonos. Is it worthwhile or is it not worthwhile? I think I'm going to make an investment. I'm going to give away my pot of chulent at the same time. I'm now gaining. I'm making investments, and he really gained. Eventually he got the bruchas, eventually he got the bechoyre. This is our little Yaakov, this is our little Yaakov, little Esav that we all have. Whenever we have a dilemma, whenever we have a situation, we have a little voice inside us that tells us, now you're going to have immediate gratification, go for it. And the other little voice inside us tells us, no, it's not worthwhile. If you could use this to invest in eternity, you have the option of either doing a mitzvah, going learning Torah, or doing a mitzvah, doing a chesed, or at the same time you could go and enjoy yourself sitting on the couch and drinking coffee and doing nothing, then the little voice will tell you, immediate gratification. The other voice will tell you, invest in the future. You're not going to gain anything now, but in the future it's going to bring you bruchas. So this is the constant mechuma that we have, and of course, it's even more important when it comes to doing an aveira. Every single aveira, why do people do aveiras? People don't do aveiras because they're bad, they want to do bad things. It's because they think that this aveira is going to bring them some immediate gratification. It's going to bring them hanua. It's going to bring them olam hazeh. So then again, you have the same dilemma. So the guy Tzara will tell you, immediate gratification, it's worth it. You're going to have to pay a price for it. Who cares? It's late. I have no interest in thinking about the future. I'm thinking about the present. Otherwise, we'll tell you, no, it's an investment. You can now invest in the future. This explains the kasha that we started off. How can Chazal say that little kids are born only with the Yetzirah, not with the Yetzirah? Little kids, such innocent, sweet little kids, what are you going to say that only have Yetzirah, only have Yetzirah? The answer is, come to a child that has a £10 coin, £10 bill in his hand. I'm telling you, you're offering him a little sweet that costs no more than 10 pence. Ask him which one he prefers. If he prefers the £10 note, he prefers the little sweet. What's he going to tell you? The little sweet. He knows that, you know, this £10 note, you could later on go to a shop and you could buy thousands of these sweets. It doesn't make a difference. If he's now going to have immediate gratification, they haven't got this, little kids cannot think about the future. They need to have this immediate gratification. Now slowly but surely, as a child grows a little bit older, then slowly he has some more seichel, until finally when it comes to the age of a mitzvah, then he really understands that no, that sometimes it's worthwhile to give away on the immediate gratification in order to invest for the future, because that's what the Yetzer Tov is all about. That's what Chazal mean when they say that when the child turns a mitzvah, that's when he gets his Yetzer Tov. So I think this will be the first answer on this question that we started off, that how are we allowed to be Nehenah from Olam Hazeh? We gave it away to Esav. Esav, he's the one that got Olam Hazeh. Who gives us the right to be Nehenah if something doesn't belong to us? Now the answer is very simple. It depends why you are living here. Is this Olam Hazeh your final destination? Are you living as if this is your final destination and I'm going to make sure to enjoy just for the sake of enjoyment? Then you're right. That's already going, it's not your territory. It doesn't belong to you, it belongs to Esav. But we are not here as a means, as a final target. We are here all on a business trip. We are here on a business trip. We're here to invest in eternity. We're here to invest in the future, to invest in Torah, to invest in mitzvahs. That is our purpose of being here. Now, as we're here, of course, when people go away on business trips, they don't sleep in the streets. They don't sleep on the floor in the streets. Very often, you'll take a nice hotel room. You'll take and you'll eat in a good restaurant. But you know, you don't spend your time thinking about where can I have my next enjoyment, where can I go to the next restaurant, or where can I go to have my next meal. That's not what's on your mind. What's on your mind is where can I make the next business deal and where can I make the next investment. That's what you're thinking about constantly. Because you know, this is not your final destination. Your final destination is to get back home and to have all your investments here. That is the approach that we Yidden Ahe Boilam Azeh B'Yahe. We have to enjoy it because we need to eat, we need to drink, we need to do everything we have to do because we have to live a life. At the same time, this is not our purpose. Our purpose is here to invest in the future. But I think the answer, I'd like to take this mahalach a step further. I'd like to take the step further and a little bit deeper. I think the answer goes a lot deeper than that. And I'd like to start off with tell you a story that I heard from a grandfather, the Milwaukee Rebbe. He said as follows. He said, a Yid once came over to him and told him that for many, many years ago, I think it was about 20, 30 years ago, you told me a chiddush, and since then my life changed completely, changed dramatically. So, his idea is this, and he turns to him and says, perhaps you could share with me the advice that I shared with you. I mean, what was advice that changed your life completely? Perhaps you could help me out too. So he said, I'll tell you. I was once in your city where you live. He lives in Milwaukee, in the Midwest, in America. And you had an old mother, my great-grandmother, my grandfather's mother. She was an elderly woman. She lived, I think she was 90-something when she lived. She was the older sister of the Baba Rebbe. She was the sister of the Baba Rebbe. And she lived in Milwaukee. She was an elderly woman. And my grandfather used to go every single morning to eat breakfast with his old mother. She enjoyed making eggs. You know, she had the old-fashioned thing. They didn't have any problem with eating more than one egg per day. So she made sure to give at least 4 or 5 eggs a day. And every single day he used to go to his mother and spend time and eat breakfast there. That was every single morning. So this fellow who was a new person in town, who was a guest in town, and he sees my grandfather going up to the door of his mother, where his old mother lived. And before he knocks on the door, he sees him saying something to himself. And then he knocks on the door and he walks in. He was very surprised at what's this thing that he's saying. So finally afterwards he asked him, what is it that you stopped by the door and you said something before you went in? What went on there? So my grandfather said, I'll tell you, listen here, I love my mother. I love my mother and I love spending time with my mother. Every single moment of there, I just simply enjoy every moment of being there. But I know one thing. If I'm going to be here and just simply spend time because I love my mother, then nothing is going to be left of it. After I come back home, the whole thing goes down the drain. There's nothing left of this whole thing. I decided I'm going to invest in the future. What did I do? I added on a few little words before I go in. I go in, I say, I'm going in order to be mekayim, the mitzvahs eser d'oraisa of kibud em. That's what I'm doing. But what happened now? What changed? I did the exact same thing. I still enjoy spending time with my mother. I still enjoy eating breakfast. But the difference is, this half an hour is now put away for the eternity. This is now going to stay forever and forever. This is, I've taken something which is simple, something which is gashmistik, and I transformed it into eternity. I transformed it into an investment which is going to stay with me forever and forever. This fellow said, this thought went into his head, and it completely, completely changed his entire outlook on life. I happened to have heard another story in this past Shabbos. There was a famous Rebbe, he was called the Divrei Yisrael of Moshitz. Moshitz Rebbe. Now in Moshitz, they were very famous for the songs. They composed tunes and songs, and he was world famous for the songs that he was. People used to come from all around just to hear the songs of the Divrei Yisrael. Now at one occasion, you think he was in Vienna. He was in Vienna, and he was going to go through a procedure on his leg, an operation on his leg by a doctor, I think his name was Dr. Soloveitchik, I think that was the name of this doctor. He was going to do the procedure. I don't think it was from or not. So, in any event, he was going to have to go through, he's going to have anesthesia. I mean, it's a proper operation. And at the time, anesthesia was something which wasn't so well advanced, and there was a big danger that it could paralyze the person. So they called him in, and they had to sign the contract. So, you know, you're letting yourself do this anesthesia, but you know, there's a good chance that you're going to be paralyzed for life. And so he was an elderly person, he was schwach. He didn't want to go for it. So he told them, "Don't worry, you can make the operation without anesthesia. It's impossible. It's impossible. The pain that you're going to feel, it's just you're not schwach." So he said, "Tell me before the operation is going to start, I'm going to put my whole focus into making. I'll make a song, and I'll be so focused on the song, I won't be able to feel the pain at all." So I can't have it. I said the hospital room, I think, was on a high floor, and it had a beautiful view of the entire Vienna. So you could see all the beautiful buildings and everything. It was a very nice town. And as he was lying on his bed, he was able to see the whole thing. So he made a song on the words, I think it was, as a call, what? Eskeru. Eskeru, that he remembers that it's true, that to call Er al-Tila Baniya, all the other towns are so well built, and Yerushalayim is never down the drain. He made a whole song, and this was, I can't remember how many parts of the song, I think it was 50 parts of the song. So he makes we're used to having a song of about 2 or 3 parts of the song. He made 50 parts of the song. It's a tremendous song for those who know it. It's very difficult to know it and to memorize it, but for those that say it's a tremendous song. He sat there the entire time without moving an inch, and he made the thing without peeping a sound, and he was fully focused on making the song. After he finished the operation, the doctor comes over to him and tells him, this is not human, it's not Shaykh. So in the other room we had a strong general who also went through a procedure with anesthesia. He jumped and he screamed and he yelled. So he says, listen here, I also yelled. But there's a big difference. He said, this fellow yelled, but this yelling, there's not going to be anything left of it. I took my yelling and I transformed it into a song which is going to stay with us forever and forever. That means taking mundane things, taking Olam Hazeh and transforming it into eternity. So this is something which is so well worth remembering. People anyway do things throughout their life. So I'll give another example. Two people go to bed at night. Yeah, so they're going to sleep now for the next 7-8 hours. One person puts himself to bed and goes to sleep. The next person stops for a moment before he goes to bed and says, I'm now going to go to sleep for the next 7-8 hours to be mekayim, to have koyach, to be able to serve Hashem tomorrow. What's the difference? The difference is, the second person was now oisik for 7-8 hours beretzifus. He was oisik in avodas Hashem. He was oisik in putting away for eternity. He took these 8 hours of sleep, and they're going to stay with him forever. Whereas the first person, nothing was left of it. Every time we eat, every time we drink, whenever we go out to work, then we can do the same thing. I'm going out to work now in order to be my father's my family. So it's being a kind of mitzvah in the Torah by doing that. Wherever we have the opportunity, every single moment of our day, to transform the Gashmias and turn it into pieces of gold. Take dust and actually turn it into pieces of gold, and of course investing it in the future. I'd like to tell you another story that's regarding this concept of the hair. This story also is from a grandfather from the Walkie Rebbe. And it's a good story to remember. Now, I'll give a little background. This story happened in the times of the Baal Shem Tov. He was the founder of the Hasidic movement, as we all know. Now, at the time, there was an extreme opposition against the Baal Shem Tov. And the reason for that is because it was just before that was the time of the Shabbos HaTzvi. He was a Mashiach Sheker, he was a false Mashiach, and he got many people started to follow him, and he was a very charismatic person, and all of a sudden he converted to Islam, and the whole thing ultimately went down the drain. It was a very, very terrible time for the Yidden at the time, and when the Baal Shem Tov, who was a leader, all of a sudden he showed up on the scene, and he of course had many followers, he had hundreds of followers, he told the people that they shouldn't be down. At the time people were very, very down, and very, you know, they had all the pogroms, and just after the pogroms of the Crusades of Khmelnytskyi, and he told them all that no matter what situation we're in, we're all still kids of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He still loves us. Every single one of us has a neshama. And he blew, he infused the people with the spirit of life. People were, and he had many followers. But of course, at the same time, the Gedolim were very wary of this new movement, just after Shabbos HaTzvi. Who knows, maybe there's another false Mashiach. So they decided that they're going to, anything which looks like it's a new movement, we're going to go and we're going to oppose it. And they meant it good, because the Tekka at the time, these Gedolim Tekka thought that this is something which was going to bring down Yiddishkeit. And it wasn't until about two generations later when they finally saw that it wasn't distracting Yiddishkeit, but on the contrary, it was just, you know, helping out Yiddishkeit, then that was when the opposition stopped. But the very first few years, there was an extreme opposition to the Baal Shem Tov. As for that, in many cities, they excommunicated the people that followed the Hasidim, and they told the people no one's allowed to eat from Shoichet, that shechted their meat, and no one's allowed to let their daughters marry someone who was Hasidish. That was in the very first part of the Baal Shem Tov. Now, this story took place in Brod. Brod, the roof of Brod, one of the big Gedolim in Brod at the time, was someone called Reb Chaim Tzanze. Now, this is not the famous Reb Chaim Tzanze that we know from the Tzanze Ruf, because he was a Hasidish, obviously. He was one of the Masnagdim, who was called Reb Chaim Tzanze from Brod. He had the very same name. Reb Chaim Tzanze from Brod, he was one of the very, very chushim to the Chachumim in the town. Now, at the time, everyone knew that the Baal Shem Tov was going to come to visit the town. So they all, so of course the group of people decided they're going to have to be loichim, kanuim, we're going to go out and we're going to, you know, throw stones at him, we're going to make sure to give him a very, very nice vichim abum, a very nice welcome to town. But you know, of course he didn't have time for all that nonsense, he was, you know, up to 79, he didn't have time for all that, so he didn't go out, he didn't join his friends, but he sat and learnt himself. That day, a shala came over to this roof, a woman came over with a shala. It's got to do with the family purity, some of the shala that have to do with chayv krisus. And he passed that this woman, it's okay, it's not a problem, and whatever, it's a nishka shala. That night, the Sokhaim sounds is lying in bed, and he's going through everything that he passed throughout the day, and he's thinking about this psak that he passed for this woman. All of a sudden, it occurs to him that maybe he made a mistake, and maybe by mistake, he was machshil this woman with something which is not out of the chayv krisus. He got terrified, and he quickly stood up, and he called down his shamash, his gabbe, and he said, we have to, it was the time for 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe still he's going to be able to save it in time, we're going to go run to the house of this woman, we're going to knock on the door and see maybe we can still save it before it's too late. So he goes up with his gabbe, couldn't figure out what was going on, the rebbe all of a sudden is waking him up in the middle of the night. He goes over to this house, to knock on the door, too late, they missed the boat already. And he was heartbroken. He was matched to the yid. He didn't know how to put himself, and he told himself, what was it that goyim, what avair did I do which caused me to such a big michshul? So he went through the day, and he couldn't see any avair that he did throughout the day. The only avair he could come up with, that maybe, whilst his friends went out to throw stones at the Baal Shem Tov, he didn't join them in this major mitzvah, in throwing stones at the Baal Shem Tov. So maybe, because of this major avayah that he did, that he didn't throw a stone at the Baal Shem Tov, he was nechshul with paskening a psak which wasn't allowed. So he decided he has to do tshuva. He decided the next morning he's going to make sure to wake up nice and early, and he's going to make sure to pick up the stones and to throw it into Baal Shem Tov to be misaking for this major avayah that he did, that he didn't throw the stones at the Baal Shem Tov. So the next morning he wakes up the gabba at 6 o'clock in the morning and says we have to go very early because we've got a very important job in front of us. This gabba couldn't figure out, and here he is, the roof's woke him up last night 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's waking him up again 6 o'clock in the morning. So they go up and they go to where the Baal Shem Tov was staying, and of course he goes and he picks up the stones from the thing and he fills up his pockets with all these stones, and he's about to be mekalpun of the Baal Shem Tov. And that was just after the Netz, and Baal Shem Tov, as we know, used to daven by the Netz of Ham. He's davening the Sikhan every single day. So the Baal Shem Tov wakes up and comes out the door, and he's dressed with his talus and tefillin, and his face was glowing and shining. And so Chaim Tzanz is standing there, and he was taken aback with this majestic look of the Baal Shem Tov. He simply couldn't bring himself to throw the stones at the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov sees him and he goes over to him and gives him his hand, and he says, don't worry, you didn't make a mistake. The Taz paskens clear like you. In the case that you paskened, the Taz paskens just like you paskened. He thinks about it and says, you're right. I didn't make a mistake. Now the Baal Shem Tov was Riach HaKodesh, but no one told the Baal Shem Tov about this whole thing that he had the last night. Baal Shem Tov was able to tell the Riach HaKodesh that he had this problem, and he told him that he didn't pass him. He was so happy, he just simply took around the Baal Shem Tov and he mamash simply hugged him, and they spoke to each other, and he became a big admirer of the Baal Shem Tov. Now as he's leaving the house, don't forget his pockets were still like weighing down from this heavy pocket. He took out his pockets and he throws out the stones on the floor. And then he starts walking away, and he hears someone clustering behind him. He turns around, Baal Shem Tov is standing there picking up the stones. Ask him, what are you doing? He said, listen. Stones that were picked up with a pure intention, they do not deserve to be on the floor. They deserve to spend time in the shiner's box. These are no longer just plain, simple stones. These are stones which have now been turned into gold. They are now gold. This is not just plain dirt. This is the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov said, we could go around spending our time on this world and transform everything that we step on, everything that we touch, everything that's in our lives, transform it to gold. We could spend the entire day doing Avodas Hashem, even whilst we're eating, even whilst we're drinking, whilst we're working, whilst we're doing chesed. Every single moment of the day, we could spend time investing in the future and investing in eternity. I think that's the second answer to the question, how are we allowed to live Bo'ilam Azeh? The answer is we're not living Bo'ilam Azeh. We are constantly living Bo'ilam Abu. We are living in a world which is surrounded with eternity, surrounded with the Avodas Hashem. We've changed our gashmistic things and we've transformed it into eternity, we've transformed it into Torah, we've transformed it into mitzvahs. This is our Avodah, to be here and to be in Olam Hazeh, but at the same time use the Olam Hazeh to invest for Olam Abu's life. We should really use up our opportunity whilst we're here. and we should invest for Oilam Azeh and for Oilam Abo.
Oh my God.
Channel towards